Hi, I'm Dan Benjamin, the founder of 5x5. It has been exactly 1 year since I started 5x5, and I wanted to take a moment to say thanks so much to you for listening, for all of your donations, for your kind ratings in iTunes, and for all of the support you've given along the way. We absolutely wouldn't and couldn't be here doing these shows without your help. Here's to another great year. This is the Big Web Show, episode number 37. It's everything web that matters. This show is hosted by my very good friend, Jeffrey Zeldman, and by me. I'm Dan Benjamin. And this episode is sponsored by Screens from Adovia.com. Screens lets you access your Mac from anywhere using any iOS device. It is that simple. It's a universal VNC client. Lets you use multi-touch gestures, shortcuts, and more. And you can even connect to Windows or Linux PCs, too, if you absolutely have to. It's VNC made simple, and it costs $19.99. You can check it out at Adovia.com/screens, and of course it's also in the iTunes App Store. We'd also like to thank Campaign Monitor, email marketing software for designers and their clients. You can design great looking emails using your own tools. You can track email related conversions and sales and manage your subscribers with ease. And they've just added a brand new API, monthly pricing, autoresponders, and more. Sign up now at campaignmonitor.com. Enough with that stuff. We do have to pay those bills, but Jeffrey Zeldman, hello, sir.
How are you, Dan?
I'm doing well. It's good to see you again. You've got
your
fast internet connection back. Your video is as clear as it's ever been.
Yeah, I agree. Well, most of the people in the office fortunately came down with tuberculosis. So I'm just kidding. But we do have speed for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, let's not knock it. You know, we don't want to jinx it. So who's here with us today?
We have John Knack with us today. I'm very pleased to say John is... web designer, and for I guess a decade now or longer has been at Adobe. Something mm-hmm. happens when you at Apple or Adobe. If you go to Apple, Adobe, or Microsoft, the big company, something, and I guess Google would be in there too. Something happens to you chemically or biologically. Other people think so. So like you become an Adobe person as opposed to a designer who works at Adobe. But, right? I mean, that's a perception issue. We don't know why. But you, in fact, were a web designer, you know, for maybe a decade before you went to Adobe. I want to start. I'm really surprised and pleased that you're on our show. And surprised because as long as you've been around, as long as I've been around, we really hadn't run into each other until... you wrote a thoughtful article about why isn't there a Photoshop for web design? And I responded to it online by saying, that's preposterous. Anyone who would say that doesn't know anything about web design. How dare you? So I've had second thoughts about that, of course. And I would love to talk to you about that and many other things. I know that you are you're working on tablet apps at Adobe now. You've worked on Photoshop and mm-hmm. you've worked on Flash and like that. But let's start with that. You wrote this post where you basically said, couldn't there be a better tool for web design? Acknowledging that just about everyone uses Photoshop to do the web design. But at some point, you have to either switch to a text editor or Adobe, I believe, makes an app that you could use or something. You have to switch to something else. I know mm-hmm. in my experience, like one thing that I love Photoshop for getting a basic layout done and really seeing what it'll look like. And that's great. And seeing how images fit in. But I hate it for type. I wish Photoshop had styles
for type,
like InDesign has or like CSS has. The idea that you have to keep making setting type every time you make a paragraph, which what is that hard to do? Is it
so? Normally, this isn't the kind of thing I would mention, but I think I've mentioned it on my blog, so I think it's okay. That actually was a feature we were working on for CS5, and CS5 was, I think, hands down, the hardest release we've ever done in my time at Adobe, simply because we had to move the whole code base from Carbon to Cocoa on the Mac platform and then move it to 64-bit on the Mac. So it was this totally Herculean effort.
No, this doesn't instill confidence for me, Jeffrey.
John, I don't know if you can hear me, but we just lost your audio and you froze. I don't know if you can hear us.
Well, I can hear you guys. Can you hear me now?
He came back.
Oh, he's back. Right, great.
I was about to try him again. All right. Keep going.
Sorry about that, guys. That's really, really frustrating.
So you were talking about the effort, the basically changing two or three platforms, under keeping the same features and changing all these platforms at the same time.
Yep.
From carbon to cocoa to carbon? I don't remember.
Well, you don't have to care. I mean, it's one of those eternal things you shouldn't have to sweat. But it was long story short, it was a huge amount of work, and we had type styles going, but as we were coming in for the finish, it just wasn't, the quality wasn't there. There were just too many bugs, and we'd rather hold off on shipping something rather than ship it and have it be crappy. But yes, it's very much something that we know people want, and we'd love to deliver, but
they'd probably love it in Illustrator too.
Oh, it's in Illustrator.
It's in Illustrator?
Mm.
I'm such an idiot. I don't know how to use it in Illustrator. I've got CS5 and I've never... Golly.
Yeah, it's been there since CS2, I think.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. No, it's only embarrassing if you work on the product, like if you're responsible for the product and didn't know it could do something, which does happen because the apps are deep.
Well, that's from a web perspective, like from a web design perspective, if the user doesn't know the feature is there, yes, the designer failed. But from a, I'm supposed to be a professional designer perspective, I should know that, right? That's not that Adobe failed. I mean, okay, I'll just, people said, don't go easy on him. He's from Adobe. But but I have to say, I mean, these are very deep products and they're not supposed to be as intuitive as a website is. Yes, one hopes that when you learn all this stuff, it becomes intuitive, but there's got to be a learning curve on a product, on products that let you do vector art and pixel art at the same time and, all that. I mean, that's got to be tough right there.
Well, right? It is. It's the whole Socratic thing that, the more you learn, the more you realize you didn't know. And right. I remember when I joined the Photoshop team, I'd come to Adobe to do Live Motion in 2000, which was our competitor to Flash. And it was sort of, an After Effects timeline with Swift output. We were actually targeting web standards. That was sort of the whole premise was, oh, SVG is right around the corner. It'll be everywhere in 6 months. And so come on board and we'll make it a web standards animation tool. When I moved to Photoshop, I was thinking, gee, I know this thing dead to rights. I got it, sure, maybe I don't know a little bit about CMYK or something, but I rapidly learned, people use it in law enforcement and, 3D, HDR imaging and just incredible uses. So I don't know that there's any person who knows everything about it. I just don't think it's possible or probably even relevant because, it's more important to focus on what you're trying to do than trying to learn everything in the abstract.
Okay. Well, thank you for letting me off the hook. Do you think we'll have styles in CS6?
Well, okay. Let me inject a note of just a big caveat here. So, as you said, I'm not actually driving Photoshop features these days. They let me keep my office, which is nice, and so I can kind of prairie dog and stick my head out and say, hey, it'd be really cool if you did this, or I help the team gather information via my blog. I put up some surveys about, CSS output and, a lot of other topics. But I have to put on the disclaimer that I really am working on some new mobile apps. And so, I can't speak for the team what they might do. I can only say that, when I've run these surveys, people have been very clear that type in general is a big area of interest, whether it's type styles or type rendering. A lot of things are easier said than done, but suffice it to say, it's something that's on the team's radar. I can't promise whether they'd put it in or not.
Well, let's talk about that hypothetical tool that you talked about building. Whether Adobe's going to do it or someone, perhaps, is going to do it. I mean, again, if I could set type, if I could have Photoshop-like features to do the layout, and somehow that would result in CSS and HTML that was actually something like what I would write, right? Not, you know, div, but actually if I could mark things as, you know, if I could, like, here are the features that I would want, right? I would want to be able to, I would want it to work kind of like a hybrid between Dreamweaver and Photoshop, where I could do the layout in this Photoshop-like app, and I could mark the boxes, right? And I could say, that's an H2, that's an H3, paragraph, and then styles would be created. I could fine-tune them in a Dreamweaver-like text panel, but styles would be created, right? And by kind of like that paintbrush tool in Word, I could just keep copying the styles by touching them so that, you know what I mean? So that it wouldn't be creating a whole bunch of unrelated divs, but it would be like, here's another paragraph, here's another list item. That seems doable, doesn't it? I mean, well, not easily and not maybe based on Photoshop, but...
Well, it's a great question. You know, it is something we give a lot of thought to. I mean, one thing that's interesting being at Adobe in the last 5 years is that Adobe and Macromedia have been one company. And so we do have this tool, Fireworks, which is really, you know, much more specifically built to do web and screen design features. And they've, over the years, added a lot more richness in terms of HTML and CSS output. But I think they would agree that you know, anything that generates code, even if it's as you describe, where you've sort of specifically tagged it a little bit, it's not to say it's impossible, but it's really tough.
It's not going to write Jeremy Keith's HTML, and it's not going to write Dan Cederholm's CSS. That seems out of reach.
Right. Now, there is a tool called SiteGrinder that a lot of people like, which is just an aftermarket plugin, which will take your PSD files and turn them into HTML and CSS. But one of the tricks here is defining, well, who's this for exactly? Is it for the guys you just mentioned? Is it for you? Is it for somebody who you know, just wants to say, okay, I lay this out and turn it into a nice WordPress theme, and, you know, I don't need... Well, maybe plug your ears for a second. But, you know, their interest isn't, you know, in like the semantic validity as much.
Sure.
And right. They're just kind of like, well, you know, make it look good, make it run across browsers, and I'm, you know, searchable and I'm happy. So that's one trick we have to, is it a web designer feature? Is it for people who just want web output?
There's almost two products you're talking about. One is for my trainer or a guy who owns a restaurant who, you know, has a crappy site from 5 years ago and wants to update it, but, you know, and then the other is for Jeremy Keith and Dan Cederholm.
Right. And, you know, with Adobe, we sometimes try to do sort of more mass market stuff, and, you know, we've had pockets of success, but, you know, the company is typically known for doing like the highest end, most demanding things. You know, and then even if those aren't frankly the easiest to use, people learn them because they don't want to run out of runway. This is something I experienced with Live Motion. It was a really sort of painful lesson where I came on, they had just shipped the 1.0 product, and Flash 5 was the current version of Flash at the time. And Live Motion had a lot of, you know, kind of clever things. It imported a PSD in, I think with three steps you could convert it to an animated thing, whereas I counted in Flash the equivalent, like a 20-layer PSD was 168 steps.
Right.
You know, we had animation styles. We had this, you know, object linking stuff, which was really easy. So the point is, for what 80% of people were ever probably going to do, it was easily everything they needed, and it you know, I'll go so far as to say it made a lot of that stuff easier than Flash did. But right. We could not get those folks to take a look at it seriously because it wasn't what the other, basically the cool kids were using. And the cool kids were all using scripting at the time, and it didn't support scripting.
Right.
So even though they weren't ever going to use scripting, it was this perception thing. And so it's really hard to, you know, hard to crack that nut and make something which is... you know, I don't know. It's like, why do people buy, you know, high-end audio gear? And then, you know, like...
Here's my follow-up. So you're talking about it's possible to build the thing, but then would people use it? And that's people gravitate towards certain applications. And in some hypothetical world where Photoshop got 80% of it, where Photoshop never did it and some other product did it, people wouldn't switch from Photoshop because that's the industry standard. But what about fireworks? A lot of designers really like fireworks. A lot of people who do web stuff like fireworks. Fireworks is in some ways easier for web stuff. What if you were to take fireworks and shake it up and go, okay, we're not going to do it with Photoshop. Photoshop is what it is. You know, we'll add styles and all that, but you know, that's a nice committed base. But fireworks is a great product with a market, but in search of a bigger market. Maybe fireworks could be the tool that lets people at different levels, you know, quickly put together their, you know, you and I agree, you're still going to have to go in and fine tune it. Whatever the app makes, you're still just like you do in the text view of Dreamweaver. If you use Dreamweaver, you're still going to go in and change the code that it generates at some point.
Right.
But an app that gets you a lot of the way there that like figures out, say, the floats or that can, you know, that can write at least a default way of compensating for IE6 or at least a default way of, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You can tell it, an app that you know, a fireworks that you could tell it, now make a separate style sheet for IE or whatever it is that you like to do that has a few plugins.
Right.
Maybe it's extensible so that when someone writes, so that when someone like Paul Irish comes up with a nice way of handling web type, mm-hmm. instead of everyone having to copy that by home, you know, he can now make a plugin for this app, and the users of Fireworks 11 or whatever we're going to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it seems to me there's a real market for it, and it would be credible coming from Adobe. And I know you're not working on that now, but do you think there would be any interest there? I mean, I would certainly try that product. I'm sure a lot of people listening in our audience would try that product and at least use it to like quickly get halfway there with a site design.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you guys are game sometime, it might be interesting to have some of the fireworks folks, talk about it. I just kind of because I've had my head down in this new world, I haven't spoken to those guys in a little bit, so I'm not sure, you know, what they might have in mind, but everything you say sounds reasonable. I mean, I think one of the nice things about having fireworks as an Adobe product is that it takes some pressure off Photoshop to try to go as deep on everything. In fact, sometimes when I survey people about, well, hey, what if we did this web thing in Photoshop? There's a certain contingent who sort of reflexively freaks out and says, no, you know, don't do anything more. Leave it to fireworks. And I hear that argument, definitely. On the other hand, you know, fireworks has been out, 12, 13 years. It has its market, and believe me, I think it's a great product. But for some reason, you know, people have been sort of unwilling to go to it as much, even when it was, Macromedia had it and were really pushing it like crazy. Folks stuck with Photoshop. So it makes me think, well, as much as I want fireworks to succeed, and I think they should run with all these good ideas, we can't just sit around with Photoshop, and we have to serve the people who are continuing to vote with their feet and use it. And that's why I want to talk to you guys, and that's why I do these surveys and say, hey, we're not going to, maybe radically reshape it, but you know, are there some common sense things we could do that would make your life easier? And the good news is we've gotten a lot of really good suggestions that way.
What about fireworks?
Well, so I absolutely know people are concerned, and I wish I could give you a better answer. I'm not, like I say, I haven't spoken to that team in a while. So I can only kind of give you a non-answer. I hope that's I mean, like I say, I think it's a great product. I know there's a really passionate user community around it. But, you know, I can't give you any, you know, like I'm not going to make any headlines to say, oh, it's gone. Or I can't give you like this complete blanket. It'll be around for the next 20 years. So... I guess I would say maybe after the show I could get in touch with those guys and see if they could follow up with you. But I can't really speak on their behalf.
Okay, okay. But I really want to get into and give time to get into the kinds of things that you're working on now. I just, before we do that, there was a question from one of our fans, Gavin Elliott, this morning, who said, to ask you why Photoshop crashes so much. And, you know, it doesn't crash so much for me, but it does crash so much for him. And that may be how much RAM you've got, how you use Photoshop, what else is open in the background, all that. I don't know. Is there a generic answer, or is there an answer about things a person could do to limit how much crashing happens?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, there shouldn't be an answer because they're, you know, obviously shouldn't have to do anything. So I guess what I would say is, first of all, I'm sorry to hear that. You know, if there's anything you could send us that would be, you know, helpful in terms of troubleshooting, like say, geez, I'm always doing this kind of work and it always seems that, you know, if I've got like two windows up and I do X, it, you know, half the time it crashes. That's really valuable. So
you get those automatically though, don't you? I mean, every time an app crashes on the Mac platform, it sends a very detailed report. And every time an Adobe app freezes or crashes, it sends a report to Adobe.
It does now. It didn't for a long time. But yes, they do now do that, which is great. But the thing is, it's just kind of a big, you know, machine dump of text. It doesn't give you the scenario. So when I have something crash, like mail was crashing for me for some reason yesterday, I actually say, oh, do you want to tell us what happened? And I do take just a second to say, you know, I was adding something to the address book. And then I just put jnac@adobe, which is my email address. And that way, if somebody on that QE team should happen to see it, they've got something a little more human readable. So
I agree. I do that as well.
Yeah. So, you know, I know it's a pain in the butt. And obviously it's in a moment of anger, right? But I'm always in the spirit of like, can I help whoever this is make their app better? So I just jot my email address in there in case they want to follow up. And I would say to anybody listening, if you have any even halfway reproducible steps, there is a bug report form online. I don't know the URL offhand. So if you could just remember jnac@adobe or tinyelvis@adobe, oddly enough, does
nice.
Still work. So that was sort of my .com era, like, let's get cool handles, even though it's
sure.
meaningless. If one of those sticks in your brain, send it to me. For example,
tinyelvis@adobe.com.
TinyElvis, honest to God, try it and I'll send you an email back.
Okay, okay.
I visited the guys at Panic about a year ago, Cable Sasser and Nevin Mergen and those guys. And, you know, Nevin was pointing out something where he does, you know, this, you know, inordinate amount of like pixel work to make games and things. And he was doing something where he was on his iMac, you know, with two views up, he zoomed in, he could get it to crash. And so that was really helpful because I could relay it to the team. We tracked down, it was something related to OpenGL. It was probably specific to that configuration, which is what makes it hard to test.
I was going to ask about fonts, because in my experience, with any application, when I've had crashes, I mean, the two things that happen for me are I have a lot of fonts open, or I have a font that's problematic for whatever reason, and it doesn't. And the other thing for me, sometimes having like Font Explorer open and drag thing or default folder, any kind of little app that enhances your work environment, maybe accessing some part of the memory that that Photoshop is using to write files to or something like that. I mean, I find that as long as I don't have mail and a lot of other stuff open in the background, and you just have basically Photoshop, a text editor, and maybe iTunes open, and you know, if I limit it to that, I never have problems. But that's me, and I may not be using as many layers as that person. Again, I think what you're saying is it depends, and follow up with bug reports, because things do get fixed if you work with Adobe. It sounds like what you're saying.
Absolutely, and we really do read all of those, just in case anybody thinks they're just going into some, you know, getting dumped into a lake somewhere. That's not the case.
Really? Then I apologize for some of mine.
That's okay. That's like I say, we got a lot of hopefully thick-skinned people, and you know, especially
I was having trouble with Illustrator for a while, and I remember saying, "Opened it." I remember just writing in all caps, "Opened it," and like sending that over and over, like just having a crash and just writing, "Opened it."
Well, let's go off of this this first second. We have Sean O'Brien in the chat room asking. He says, it feels like there's a constant high level of negativity directed at Adobe from the web development community. And he's asking you, John, do you perceive this negativity? And do you feel that it's strong? And he also asked, does it seem to come from other communities as well?
That's a great observation. Hopefully that means I'm not, it's not just me thinking that. I think there's... this whole interesting thing which has gone on with Flash and Apple. And, you know, I wrote a post called Sympathy for the Devil about a year ago talking about Flash. And, you know, believe me, I'm a realist. I'm a pragmatist. You know, I don't think Flash is perfect, and neither does the Flash team. But I think that in the last year, you know, people like to sort of pick sides and things and root for their team. And, you know, it's almost like the more arbitrary the thing is, the more passionate they get. So this has been one where it's like, can I, you know, do I want to align myself with the forces of, you know, progress and high stock prices and taste and, you know, whatever they, you know, want to say about Apple. And believe me, I say this as a guy who's been using Apple's stuff since I was 5 years old in 1980. I mean, it's been ever since, right? So I'm talking down a MacBook Pro. I've got an iPhone in my pocket, right? So I always have to say that because it's like, well, you're not, you must be some Mac hater. And it's couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, I was the guy, this is pathetic, actually. I should have been like going around for Amnesty International in college, and I was going around in like 96 putting up Mac posters at Best Buy. Yeah. I mean, people don't know this, and it's like, they're like, oh, you're the evil Adobe guy, you know? Yeah. And it's like, oh, come on, guys. Look, here's the thing. Web, personal opinion, the reason YouTube... and although the web video took off, his Flash player was everywhere and it could do web video. It was never designed to be strictly a video player, but its presence everywhere is what let that take off seemingly overnight. Whereas, you know, QuickTime, Windows Media, Reel had been around for a decade and it just hadn't happened. So there's plenty of negative stuff you can say about Flash, and that team is, you know, is very much working to make things better.
Did you, as an Adobe guy who's like, you know, with the whole web basically siding with Apple and beating up Flash and Adobe for a year, did you get any shameful pleasure from Google's decision not to support H.264, or did you find a delicious irony in it? Are they sort of toasting Google at Adobe right now, or how does that work?
Well, let me... I know it sounds like all this political hand-waving, and it... I don't mean to be like some Weasley corporate guy. What I'll say is, I mean, Adobe and Macromedia became one company, but, you know, I'm still down here in San Jose and there in San Francisco. So, you know, I don't have a ton of exposure to what those guys, you know, like hallway conversations. I haven't seen, you know, toasting or hand waving or anything. You know, other folks certainly might have more insight into it. But at the end of the day, I think people here are pretty sincerely... aimed at the outcome, right? Aimed at getting things done. And, you know, Flash is a means to an end. HTML is a means to an end. CSS, same thing. And, you know, anything that lets us make tools that help you get your job done is what makes us money, frankly. I mean, Flash Player is one of those things that Adobe spends millions of dollars a year building and distributing in order to sell creative tools. So, you know, as the web browsers get more capable, that's just more opportunity for us to sell tooling. In fact, we've demonstrated tools for HTML5 output. So the H.264 thing specifically, you know, there's a lot of back and forth. I don't have any great insight into that decision. I mean, for me, just as a creative person, it's hard because, you know, the more... Even if it's not an open standard per se, if it's a de facto standard, you know, it makes my life easier because I can just target one output type and everything.
Right.
So I don't
in
know.
In both cases, it seemed like someone, it seemed like a powerful company with control over basically millions of desktops is the wrong word now, but you know, with control over millions of virtual desktops or mobile, millions of platforms, millions of experiences, let's say, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. saying we're going to take away this tool that's very popular because we have a problem with it, right?
Yeah.
From a legal perspective, that may not be what's going on at all. And there may be a technical reason for it. It may have nothing to do with hostility between companies. But yes, as a creative person, you feel like, oh, this tool's being taken away. I can't use this now. What's going to happen to what I just designed? What's going to happen to what I just built?
Right, right. And, you know, I think the web will find ways to make it work. I mean, Flash has supported H.264 for, you know, 3+ years. I think yesterday Microsoft was releasing some extensions that will put H.264 back into Chrome. And so, at the end of the day, people will do whatever it takes. I mean, we've all, you know, suffered through generations of web browsers and hacking around crazy stuff just to get the right experience out there. But yeah, I mean, you want to spend more time creating and less hacking.
And that's the thing. It seems like it seems like a year ago we hit a sweet spot where kind of everything was working and standards were supported and everything was great. And now we're going right back into platform difficulties and with fonts too, right?
Well, you know. I mean, here's what's interesting. So you mentioned, you know, what am I looking at with tablet stuff? And, mm-hmm. Just pragmatic. Forget that I happen to work at Adobe and if you say, and I'm not really giving a hint here. I'm just saying like some of the problems we look at, it's like, okay, let's say you want to put animated interactive stuff out to the world. Well, how do you do that? You know, it used to be like, okay, you could use a SWIF and everybody could see it. And now it's like, well, geez, okay, they can't do SWIF on iOS. So if you do HTML5, well, what does that exactly mean? And then how does that work across browsers? And, you know, what's the performance? So, yeah, now, to really get that ubiquity and consistency across devices and runtimes, you have to support multiple formats. Now, on some level, you know, I can complain about that. On another, as I say, that's an opportunity for Adobe to solve problems, right? So everybody looks at it like, geez, Adobe, the company, must be sitting here, you know, shaking its fist and freaking out and saying, oh my God, if Flash isn't the be-all end-all, then we're doomed. And it's like, well, first of all, I mean, Adobe makes about 7% of its revenues on Flash, which is something people seem to forget. So just bear that in mind. The other is, Adobe's been making HTML tools for a long time. In fact, I was just over in Hamburg, Germany with the guys who built GoLive and who, you know, then later worked on some Dreamweaver stuff. And, you know, people forget that the company, you know, is not only interested in HTML, but has been doing it for, you know, 10 or 15 years. So the point is, yeah, there's pain here, but where there's pain, there's opportunity. And, you know, whether it's opportunity for an individual web developer who knows multiple runtimes and has, you know, portable skills, or whether it's a toolmaker like Adobe who can say, all right, you know, do this one thing and we'll hit multiple runtimes. In fact, you guys might have seen a couple months ago at Adobe Max, they showed off some Swift to HTML5 conversion tools. So that's actually been publicly demonstrated. And the idea isn't that, you know, you just sort of write once and it would magically make all the markup and everything you'd want. But it is to say, well, can we at least greatly lower the pain, right, and the cost? If you're going to effectively, okay, this is the world we live in, you're going to have to target multiple runtimes, let's make that a little more economically reasonable. And hopefully, you know, the reward for us is you buy the tools that let you do it.
Absolutely. When Steve made the announcement, I thought two things. One was, I'm so happy he said this today because we were coming out with Jeremy Keith's HTML5 for Web Designers book the next day. Uh-huh. And the other thing, you know, and I knew it would affect sales, and it did. And the other thing I thought was this, and I wrote this, is a great opportunity for Adobe because really they're about the best at building these kind of tools. They have the most experience and you know, it is. Now, so it's what you're saying is that that's how Adobe looked at it too, and they seized the opportunity, and that's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's ours. This sounds arrogant, which I don't mean it to be. If I say it's ours to lose, I mean, certainly other people will come in and make great tools, and, you know, Adobe apps will have to compete just like they do anywhere. But I, to me, that's great. I mean, that's where, like I said, I came to Adobe 11 years ago to make a tool that was aimed at web standards, animation, and interactivity. And I feel like, you know, Microsoft made a clerical error, and they, you know, on their SVG roadmap, they wrote 2010 as opposed to 2000, which, you know, was a bummer because, you know, that at the time, IE was sort of effectively setting the standard, and if they didn't support it, then there just wasn't right. an option.
That's right.
So, you know, I think, yeah, I mean, you can't have it all. It's like we can all complain, well, gosh, there's more runtimes and more browsers than ever to target. On the other hand, they're pushing each other more than they used to and keeping each other honest. And so it's like, well, you know, pick your poison. Do you want consistency or innovation? You know?
One of the questions here in the chat room, and I think this is a really interesting one. This one's by Vector Funk. Can John share any thoughts from Adobe on the Mac App Store, and if you can see, for example, the next version of Creative Suite being distributed via the Mac App Store? How is that affected? Because one of the things I remember before the Mac App Store had premiered, before it had come out, a lot of people were saying, well, we certainly will never see Photoshop there. And, you know, there are some bigger apps showing up there, but what about that as a distribution point? Is that something you guys are looking at? Can you talk about that at all?
Well, I can talk about it. I mean, it has to be a little bit vague because it is very new.
Sure.
I mean, one thought I have is if there's sort of a sliding scale, then the cheaper and the less well-known things are, probably the more they benefit from that distribution channel, right? It really helps small developers solve some big problems, which are, you know, how do I get known? How do I get, you know, trusted and payments, and, you know, how do I get sort of peer reviews?
Sure.
All the things which are tough for an indie. And to that end, I think it's great. I mean, it's a marvelous sort of impulse buy place. Of course, on the other end of the spectrum are things like Creative Suite, where, you know, probably nobody goes and just is like, you know, they're having coffee and they're like, oh, $2,500 for the master collection? Yeah, I'll get a couple.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's really a considered purchase. And it's something people generally know about already. So the advantages, you know, that the App Store offers aren't nearly as pronounced for a big, well-known, higher-priced app. Now, that's not to say we won't or shouldn't do anything there. In fact, you know, I'm all ears if people have ideas on, you know, like what would be good fits. Maybe, you know, maybe, okay, just shoving Photoshop in there. Yeah, we could do it, but would that be the right thing? Are there other sorts of apps from Adobe you'd like to see? You know, maybe are there things which are smaller, more you know, task oriented? I'm you know, I'm just thinking out loud. It's
sure.
not suggesting, but yeah, I mean, if anything comes to mind, we'd love to hear about it.
I think you should put all your products there. I'd buy them
yeah.
that way.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest,
yeah.
So would I. I think, you know, for me, if because you have this situation right now, and it's reasonable to think that other people have this too. It's almost like a fear, especially if it's a smaller application, which, you know, generally your apps tend to be more expensive and bigger and, you know, larger in file sized applications versus a small utility, let's say. So I know that there's a concern right now that, well, if I buy something from the individual software developer, from the vendor, if I go to their website and buy it, and maybe it's not yet available in the App Store, there's the concern of, well, what if they decide to abandon selling it independently? What if they go 100% App Store, as a lot of app developers have already done? You know, what I hear you saying is, don't worry about that. You guys don't have any plans to necessarily do that right now. Am I reading you correctly there?
Oh yeah, I mean, if somebody was, you know, is thinking about upgrading to CS5 and then thinking, geez, you know, what tomorrow Adobe's going to be in the App Store and somehow that money will have been wasted, that's not to worry about. I mean, I think, you know, we would, if Adobe were ever to make that move, we would really do everything we could to make sure that people don't get caught like that. You know, I mean, you know, I'm sure Apple doesn't want to see anybody get screwed either. So, you know, like I say, I don't think that's something people should sweat about.
Here's where I would do it. Here's why I think you would make money and why I would definitely use it. So I have an agency. I have a lot of computers, and most of the people I know, whether they work at an agency, they're freelance, whatever, they have more than one computer they work on. Let's say a laptop and something at their office desk, and maybe they have a co-working space. I mean, right? Mm-hmm. And it's hard to remember. So when I buy Creative Suite, it's a big investment, right? And it's hard, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, well, I know I put that on my office computer, but did I also, was I able to copy it at home? And did I, you know, what do I have? So let's say, I bought Creative Suite. I've got a MacBook Air for business, but I don't have Creative Suite on it because it would be slow on the MacBook Air. And also because, mm-hmm. you know, I don't have the right to just keep, you know, copying it from one machine to another. So I've got this,
right, right.
and I'm, so now I'm in a hotel and at the last minute, something comes in and I have to work on it and I need Photoshop. If mm-hmm. I could just, it's a business expense. My client needs work. Mm-hmm. I'm in this hotel. I could buy just Photoshop, not the whole Creative Suite, just download Photoshop to the MacBook Air and mm-hmm. use it to complete a project. Mm-hmm. It's worth it to me. It's worth it to my company. Mm-hmm. And now I know that the copy that I have on my machine is, you know, it's legal. It's, you know, it's mm-hmm. an authorized copy and all that. So I don't have to worry that I'm doing anything in violation of my license. I don't right. have to, you know, right. with the MacBook Air, which I, you know, I think the laptops are going to go more and more in that direction because they're mm-hmm. it's like, it's basically a keyboard on an iPad, right? Mm-hmm. And it's very convenient for, as the price on this kind of, and with netbooks too, I mean, as the price on this thing goes down, as business people get tired of traveling with this like 10-pound brick, and they just want something they can, I mean, I slip this in my gym bag.
Right, right. right.
I take it with me. And if I know that as long as I have a connection, I can get any Adobe or Microsoft or anything else that I don't usually have on the machine, that I can buy that. Mm-hmm. And I can show the client, here's the expenditure. I mean, it's all, or I can show my boss. I mean, I think it would increase sales and be good for you guys. And I would use, as a user, I would really like it. So.
Okay. Well, like I say, I mean, that's good feedback. This stuff is all new and, you know, just Tiny Elvis at Adobe, if you want to, or just JNAC on Twitter, you know, if you want to send feedback, because those are, that's good perspective. I mean, you can already, you know, download Photoshop. And in fact, in your case, you could just, you know, grab it for the 30-day trial. But yeah, I mean, there's still the immediacy and the flexibility could be greater. So we are thinking about how to facilitate the kind of scenario you just described. I don't have anything to announce yet, but it's definitely on our minds.
Cool. Well, we're running low on time, and we haven't even talked about your mobile work, which...
Yeah, maybe you can jump in and talk about that really briefly. At least give us an idea of what you're doing there now. That would be great to hear about.
Sure, sure. So I think the thing is, all right, so I have an iPad. I think it's great. I use it like a consumer. And when I talk to most designers, they use it like a consumer. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, I download Sketchbook Pro. I download Layers and Brushes, and they're all great. And ArtRage. And I say, oh, and what do? Yeah, I surf the web and check email and watch Netflix. Okay, right. Great. Right. Now, do you want to do more is the question. They're like, well, I already have a computer. And I don't need another. I would just go buy an Air or whatever. You know, I have this thing which I treat more conceptually as a sort of lean back, relaxation, farting around device. Mm-hmm. So the challenge for me is, you know, aside from digital photography stuff where like you said, you put it in your gym bag, a lot of people want to put an iPad or similar in their camera bag, right? There's some really clear use cases there. Mm-hmm. Beside that, you know, what kinds of creative tasks are more in the casual, fun, you know, relaxing, ideation, gaming kind of world. And so we're thinking a lot about that. I don't think people just want, you know, Photoshop 3 brought to the iPad. I think they want something which is sort of thematically different, where the pleasure is the purpose, in a sense, right? Where it's, you know, we're just trying to go after different use cases. And to be honest, it's not as clear a customer mandate because people don't yet really know. I didn't anticipate liking Instagram as much as I do, you know, but I love the way it ties together creation and social feedback. It makes it like, okay, I made something, and now this person I like gave me a little like, and I realize I use Instagram to look cool, you know, which is sounds super needy, but you know, I think that's sort of honest. It's like, yeah,
we
yes,
all
I
do
use
that.
It. Right. It's about photography, but it's also about that little, you know, food pellet coming down the chute and you know, sending you some endorphins or whatever. So I think a thought is, you know, are there ways to take that kind of that feedback and bring it to more engaged creative process? You know, something beyond just, okay, I took a picture and hit it with one effect. I don't know. That's where my head is right now, and we certainly welcome feedback.
I want to ask if you'll consider coming back so we can talk more about the kind of stuff. Maybe when you have something to announce or something new coming out, we'd love to hear about it and get the people in the chat room to give you feedback and like that, or maybe
No, that'd be great, and I'll do it. I'll go over to Google and like sit in their routing station or something, so no one can mess with our connectivity. You know,
that's right. Well, we have a lovely. I don't know. You know, if you're not watching the live feed right now, when you watch this later, I found a lovely picture of you online.
It is fantastic. It's kind of JFK like.
Yeah, that's what it's reminding me of, Jeffrey. That's what it was. There was something about it's very presidential in a very sort of, you know, like early 60s way.
Youthful presidential.
Right. Yeah.
Youthful.
Yeah. Like the youngest president ever.
Well, you know, and then it's probably a current picture and somebody hit it with the JFK preset on their iPhone app or something.
So. Yeah. Could be. Could be.
Right. Well, listen,
I love the Photoshop app for the iPhone. I use it all the time. It's weird, but I really I don't know if you work on that, but
I do.
Touch sensitivity, being able to adjust contrast and all that just with my finger, it seems very. It's great. It's intuitive, and I kind of wish Photoshop were that easy to use. In some ways, I prefer it. It's like this quick Photoshop rush. Go in. This crappy picture. Oh, now it looks okay. And I'm done, and I send it to Facebook or Flickr or MobileMe, and I'm happy.
Okay, so that's great. Much. I mean, the team was going to be super happy to hear that, and stay tuned because we just did a new release last week, and we have another one in the wings, which is hopefully even more exciting.
Cool.
Great. Well, you know what? You're just going to have to come back here and announce all this new announce it here so that Jeffrey can help relay it, and we'd love to have you here. But listen, we are out of time. We do appreciate you being here very much, and I love Jeffrey's idea to have you back. So let's do that too. Great. And thanks to everybody who tuned in today. We want to make sure to point people at John. Are you on Twitter? Is there a good
place?
Jay Knack on Twitter. So if you want to follow him, Jay Knack.
Also blogs, adobe.com, Jay Knack.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
/ JNAC, sorry.
Yes, lots of JNAC, JNAC.com. There's a lot of JNAC these days. It's like spam with Vikings.
Tiny awesome. Elvis.
Tiny Elvis. I'll tell you about that next time.
Okay, right. So Tiny Elvis, you got to do a secret Twitter feed called Tiny Elvis where you can take off your corporate hat.
You better register right now, because if you don't, by the time this goes out, somebody else will they probably already grabbed it. It's probably too
probably.
Late.
I'm on my way to check as we speak.
All right. So. Well, listen, thanks to everybody for tuning in. You can get we should mention the t-shirts, right, Jeffrey? You linked them, but we'll mention them anyway. You can get a t-shirt at store.5by5.tv for another week or so. We've got them out there, and then they're done. It's your one chance to get them. So, Jeffrey, as always,
thank you. The t-shirts are fantastic. I can't wait to get mine. And there is a Tiny Elvis, and it's really naughty.
Oh, so be really not work not. Safe then. Well, Jeffrey, thank you. And John, as always, wonderful chatting with you. Have a good one. And everybody, we'll see you all next week.
Peace. Okay, thank you, guys.